Good evening, everyone. You can probably hear from my voice that I'm a little bit hoarse, or things are not going that well with my voice, but I thought since I was feeling up to it, we could try to do the program. And if it is getting in the way, we'll certainly, my friend Bahor will let me know, and we will do another program some other time. This program, that is. So this program is called Rejoining the Circle, and it is the eighth in our series. I thought it would be initially be 12. I don't know if we'll go to all to 12, but I think this is a particularly important one. I wanted very much to share it with you. So the underlying reality is that as serious as and determined as we are, it seems that there is always a hole in the firewall, right? There's always some place where we didn't really anticipate or didn't plan well enough to seal. And the reality is that it's understandable, because this is such an all-powerful, all-consuming drive, that it's so difficult to say goodbye, I'm cutting it off completely. Remember what Rav Avram Tversky Zatzal said of the 44,000 people he directly or indirectly treated. Nothing was ever as difficult as this. And he did not see himself as succeeded in this area at all. Because it's different than any other drive or any other addiction or obsession. Because it comes from within. It's a part of our DNA. And perhaps that firewall, that hole in the firewall, is a result of saying that we need to tell ourselves, I really can't pull away completely. I'm not convinced that I can survive without it. I know I need a way out, but I also feel I need a way to come back in if I need it. If I'm not doing well, if I'm falling apart, if I'm dying, right? It is this doubt, this fear, that invariably always leaves a window open to come back. And it's all very, very understandable. The reality is, it's not true. We don't really need it. But no one believes that, particularly since it's been used, it's been the go-to place or thing or thought or feeling or action in our lives for many years. And in the same way, we know that there really is no withdrawal if we go about it the right way. I mean, a person who is Shomer Nida doesn't experience that withdrawal. It's now, you would think the answer is, okay, let's get tough, let's play hardball. But that's really not the way to go. That's not the...
Rabbi Ostroff?
Yes.
Can we ask the other participants if what they think about the quality?
Yes, okay.
Because it sounds substantially different than your regular voice.
Okay.
Anybody willing to come forth and give an opinion? I believe you have to press 6 to come out of mute. Actually, listen. Yeah?
Yeah, I hear it well. I don't see a difference.
You hear it well. Anyone else? Number ending in 2619? You're off mute.
The So, where are we holding, Bahor?
Someone else said that they hear you very well. I can hear you, but it's just the quality is a little bit, it's a little bit different quality. But I guess we'll go with it.
Okay, then we will go with it. Mm-hmm. So, myself over here. Yeah, so the answer is, so maybe we say the answer is to play hardball. Got to get serious, hit right between the eyes. But the truth is that never really works. What is a clearer approach, and there are two approaches that I want to discuss this evening, but how to close that firewall. The one is to discover that moment, that powerful vision, that moment of understanding with incredible clarity that has the impact, the ability to change our lives forever. I've given the example of my own life after having smoked cigarettes since the age of 11. 11 or 12, 12 actually, and for many, many years, and I was not able to give it up until one morning when I was lying in bed, and I heard footsteps above me, and I realized I was dreaming, and the footsteps above me were the sounds of my children walking around my grave. Now, when you see your kids walking over you when you're lying in your grave, that's a very powerful message. I never forgot that message, and I don't believe I ever smoked a cigarette from that day on. But no one could have told me that. They could have said, are you going to die? Or they're going to say your children will be your soulmate. They'll be orphans. Or they can say anything you want. But the mind would not have processed it. It's only during the kind of the dreamlike, semi-somnambulistic state that I can look up onto the path above the ground above me, right, and see these little footsteps and say, oh my goodness, how can I ever do this to them? And so that's one of the ways that they were able to understand with great, incredible clarity. Another way, which is really part of the first, this vision, and we're not going to be talking about a vision, that is not the subject of our discussion today, but the first of these approaches, that vision, comes from somebody who, his name is, let's see, I think it's Paul, or we call him Pesach, who was a teacher, and he had been involved in his challenge for many years. He was a nice fellow, and he kind of got pulled in high school, where friends showed him some videos, and he was frum, but didn't really pay attention very much to his learning or to his anything else about Yiddish guys. So he kind of went on with life. He got a degree in education, and he was teaching in a public school. But he realized that when he was getting older and married now, that he was stuck in this hole and he wasn't going anywhere. And sooner or later, his wife is going to find out and throw him out of the house. And it kind of scared him a little bit. So he came to see me to speak to me. And once again, he was not a very spiritual guy. On the contrary, he was a very superficial guy. He was a teacher. I forget what he was teaching. But he was a nice fellow, but not a very deep person. And we spoke about ways that he can kind of curtail his challenge. And then one day he came to me with a pretty remarkable story that stays with me to this day. and it's really influenced me. I don't think I've ever shared this with you. I didn't even put it in the book. I didn't see a place for it in the book, but I should have. So he came to me the following. He said he had an uncle. His uncle was a massive Talmud Chacham. And his uncle had become quite ill. He was not that old. He was in his 70s, and he was now homebound. And so Paul had a sense that he was very lonely, and he called his uncle, and he spoke to him from time to time. And then one day his uncle asked him if he would like to come learn with him. Now, Paul had never really learned in high school. He didn't learn at all. He was running around. He was, doing what kids did in the teenage years, those years. Listened to a lot of music, running around with girls, playing baseball. Had no interest in any of this. He went to a kind of a modern from high school. This wasn't a part of his life at all and never intended it to be. So when his uncle asked him if he would have to come learn with him, he didn't do it because he wanted to come learn. He had no interest in Torah studies. He saw himself as from. He went to a shul. He has his kids. He has his wife. He paid his dues for the shul. Had a Seder and everything else. Hanukkah, Seder, the whole business, the whole nine yards, but nothing in any serious way. So Paul agreed, but he agreed not because he wanted to learn. He agreed because in his mind, this would be a mitzvah, right? He understood the concept of mitzvah, so he went to sit with his uncle. Now, as I say, his uncle was a massive Talmid Chacham. And Paul related the following story to me. He said, my uncle asked me if I ever learned Bava Kamma, which is part of the, the Gemara. I said, yes, uncle, that's uncle's name. I think it was Uncle Irving. I learned it many years ago. I didn't really understand it then. I'm sure I can't understand it. He said, would you like to learn it with me? So I said, okay. I figured that he would say it and I would fall asleep and then we'd be finishing. But he said it and he drilled me. Now, I'm not used to being drilled, but he drilled me very, very hard. And then it began to make sense to me like nothing ever made sense before in my life. And I understood, well, this is incredible, this is brilliant. I mean, Paul wasn't a dope. He read a lot of books and all this other stuff. So he had a mind. His mind wasn't destroyed. But he walked away from that encounter with his uncle, learning probably the first piece of Gemara of his life. He was absolutely astounded. Couldn't believe it. And then he told me the following. He said, that night, I had a dream, and the dream was that I was sitting in a tent, and the tent was the fabric of the tent was made of supple leather. It was a tannish, soft, buttery soft leather, and it pulsated with life, he told me. And I was sitting in this massive tent, but the tent didn't surround us. I was sitting at a dais, and there were other people sitting there with me. I was sitting with my uncle, and there were other people, some of whom I knew and some of whom I did not know. And as you looked out from this dais, you weren't looking out over the end of the tent. You were looking out over a massive universe, a beautiful universe of color and light and symphony of sound and incredible beauty. And I was overwhelmed by the beauty that I saw. I didn't know what was going on. This was, I'd never seen anything like this. So I went to my Rav, and, who never saw me as this kind of guy. He sees me as a guy who shows up in shul, right, and sells my chametz and does what I have to do, but never even asking a question. I don't even go to his classes. I said, Rabbi, whatever his name was, I said, can I share something with you? He said, sure, go ahead. And I described this, and he said, that's quite interesting because, did you ever learn what the vision of Olam Haba is? He said, no. Do you ever think about it? No. He said, well, what you described the fabric of the ohel, Chazal tells us, is the or labiyosan, is the skin, the leather of the Leviathan, which is the tent by which we sit in Olam Haba. And you, didn't anybody ever teach this to you? No, I never. You sure? You must. No, I never, Rabbi. I never heard it even once. I'm telling you. Don't tell me. Don't try to implicate, imply nothing. Zero. I never understood it. I never heard it before. And what you imagined was a scene that gedolim, that fear, experience in at time to time in life, and what they share in the afterlife. It's incredible. Rabbi, how do I buy into this? Rabbi, this is something, I didn't know this is part of being Jewish. Now, this is not what I want to teach you tonight, but I just want to give you the background to this. Rabbi, I didn't know anything about this. How do I buy into this? So Rabbi said, you know, I'll tell you, Paul, it's not so easy to buy into it. You know, nobody knows, even people who we think. And he said, Rabbi told him this incredible story. He said that even people who think that they're going to buy into this, you know, they're going to get there. They pay their dues, right? They gave the tzedakah. They do the Torah. Nothing is certain. So the rabbi told him the following story. The rabbi said, Paul, you ever hear of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein? Well, sure, I don't know him, but I heard of him. He said, well, I want to tell you something about Moshe Feinstein, who lived on the Lower East Side, and he had a neighbor. And his neighbor was named Rav Tuvia Goldstein. This is the story that I heard from. And his rabbi told him, and he's telling me, right? I knew Rav Moshe, but... So this story, I had never heard this story before. He said, Rav Moshe had somebody who was very critical of him, and he would lambast him and hang up signs about him, calling him a fraud and everything terrible. And he made Rav Moshe's life miserable. Rav Tuvia Goldstein was also close to Rav Moshe. He lived in the same building. And every once in a while he would go upstairs because he himself was a Talmud Chacham, and he would ask Rav Moshe questions. So one day Rav Tuvia Goldstein is walking up the steps. He's walking up the steps, and who's walking down? This guy, right? This guy who's lambasting, who's hanging up pictures in the post office, Rav Moshe, right? Wanted, dead or alive, right? So he said, what in the world does he want to with the Rosh Yeshiva? Why does he want to talk to Rav Moshe? So he comes in, and he says Rosh Yeshiva. He said I just saw this so and so leave. He said, what do you want? So he said he wrote a book, and he wanted me to give him a approbation for the book. Haskama they called. He wanted you to write an approbation for the book, a scum for the book. But we know what he does about, what he says about you, what he writes about you, how he hounds you. I'm sure you said no. He said, I said I would agree. Right? You agreed to write a scum for him? He said, why did you do that? So Rav Moshe said, we never know what our Olam HaBa depends on. Maybe this was the one thing I had to show to get there, right? You hear that? Incredible, incredible story. Rav Moshe, who was the greatest man of his generation, wasn't sure. But that's a side story about Olam HaBa. But this vision of Olam HaBa, which Paul held on to for many years, Paul is now a very different person. I see him from time to time. He's really, that whole story with his uncle. His uncle died shortly afterwards. But his uncle left him a legacy that he began to learn, take learning seriously, and it really enabled him to get out of his challenges in a very massive way. In those days when I saw him, I really wasn't that clear about what I was teaching. I was very supportive and I had some ideas. But Paul pulled himself up by the bootstraps and did it himself. Only because he held on and he told me. Now listen to what Paul told me. He said, ever since then, every time I daven, and every time I go to shul, and every time I say a bracha, right? And every time I do a mitzvah, I try to hold on to this memory. I try to. Listen, it may only be 20% of the time. But that 20% measure is incredible. I'm holding on to my vision of Olam Haba. Right? Rav Avigdor Miller wrote a beautiful, it wasn't him, it was Yaakov Astor, who wrote a beautiful book of Rav Avigdor Miller's vision of Olam Haba. It's very, very kedai, very worthwhile to try to get it and look at it. Because these are the two kind of qualities here that I'm talking about, is this vision. One is a vision of something that scares me, right? And won't leave me, my vision of my kids walking around my grave, which led to cigarettes, right? And the other is the vision of Olam Haba, which is a positive kind of thing, a positive experience, a very positive, overwhelmingly positive experience, which Paul was able to hold on and integrate into his life over many, many years later, and it influenced everything he did. Whenever he went anywhere, he always tried to remember that vision. You were sitting in that tent. The supple leathers you can touch and you can feel, they were buttery soft. With people you were sitting next to that were from a higher world, and you looked at over this vision in front of you. This was Olam Haba. Okay. So this is one way to erect the firewall. There's another way to erect the firewall. And that's really the focus of what we're talking about today. And I didn't include any of this in the book in Rejoining the Circle. But Rejoining the Circle now is the second way of building this firewall and making it bulletproof, making it completely, completely secure. Now, obviously, this takes a long time, but it's a marvelous, marvelous way to protect yourself. Okay. So, so the word here that we're talking about, and please, before you assume that you know what I'm talking about, don't jump into it too quickly. This is a word you've heard many times over, but I don't mean it the way you think I mean it. So give me a chance to fill it out, to fill out its meaning. Because the second way of erecting the firewall is through what Chazal calls Siyata Dishmaya. Siyata Dishmaya means, if you don't know, the heavenly assistance, divine help, right? Right, if I want to get something done in the Israeli government, I need protection, right? So I call my cousin, who's a politician, and he gets it done for me. That's protection. So the Shmaya, in some ways, is where in the heavens, you are recognized as somebody who deserves special assistance because of your own efforts. And one way that we achieve this is through tshuva. Now, I'm not talking about the tshuva that you are thinking about now. I'm talking about a different kind of tshuva. And if you listen carefully, and I'm able to transmit to you, I think it'll be a very moving experience, because we're going to be doing a guided imagery on rejoining the circle. So tshuva is something that we do to return. Tshuva, shuvu, return. We want to return. What do we want to return to? We want to return to the moment when we performed something and we didn't, and we realized we should not have done it. How can we undo it? Now, it's very interesting. In Chazal, we learn, and I've learned this over and over again, that no matter what a person has done, that tshuva enables us to undo it. To undo it, and if we do it right, we undo it in our minds and hearts, and we undo it in the Shemayim as well. Now, there are certain things that we can't undo. I mean, if a guy causes a woman to become pregnant and a child is born, we can't undo it that way. So there are limits within what tshuva means. But tshuva means that being unable to reverse something that has been done in a way that we really, really want to undo, that if we had a choice, we would never go back there again. Now, in the book, there's a story I want to tell you, which has nothing to do with our topic. It's about tshuva. But there was a guy I was working with, and he had kind of led a pretty messy life, and he was trying to pull himself back together. And he was succeeding. And he came to me before Yom Kippur 1 year, and he said, you know, there's something I'm really very upset about, and that I'm more serious now about my Yiddishkeit. But when I was a kid, I was a very wild kid. I was running around a lot. And I just became very exhausted running around shul, right? Even when I was older, even when I was 12, 13, 14 years old, I couldn't sit in my seat. I just ran and ran and ran. I got up, I sat down. He said, I even remember that during the breaks of the Yom Kippur, he said, I would run a few blocks to, if the World Series was on, we would find a TV and we'd watch the World Series on TV. Right. We came back to shul. He said, one year there was not a break, but I had run around a lot and I was very thirsty. And on the way home, I was so thirsty that I passed the park. I said, I'm dying of thirst. I gotta take a drink. So what did I do? I believe that I was dying of thirst. Obviously, I wasn't, but I believe that at that moment, he's a very dramatic kid. So he took a drink of water. And I forgot about it, he told me, Shai. I forgot about it all these years, but it came back to me recently. And I said, I gotta do tshuva. I don't know how to do tshuva. I said, well, if you're sorry you did it, then Hashem forgives you. He said, no, I can't tell you that. It doesn't work. I told myself. He said, I'm just not... I need a way of doing tshuva, and I couldn't. Anyway, Yom Kippur was just a few days away, and he came back to me after Yom Kippur, and he said to me, I can't begin to tell you the incredible thing that happened to me, and I now understand the meaning of tshuva. I said, what happened? He said, well, you know, I'm married, and I have kids, and the wife just had a baby, so I wanted to get her what they called Som Kal. It's the pill that you take on Yom Kippur to make the fast easier. So I bought Som Kal for nursing women. Because they're all the same formula, but this is for nursing women. And she was very appreciative. I gave it to her. I had one left over. And I said, you know something? What harm can I do? I have a hard time on Yom Kippur. I'm going to take a pill myself. And he took a pill. Told me at 3 o'clock in the morning, he woke up. And his tongue was glued, like Elmer's glue to his palate. And he couldn't move his tongue. He thought he was going to swallow his tongue. And he got very panicky. He didn't know what to do. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. He couldn't swallow. His tongue was firmly glued to his palate. And he thought he was going to die. He got out of bed, jumped out of bed. He put on his coat, and he started walking the streets. Maybe if I walk the streets, we'll go away. You know, and he walked, he said, I can't do it. It's not going away. I'm not going to survive the night. And then he thought that, well, there's a rabbi who's a posek, who gives halachic answers, right? And he lives nearby. I'm going to knock. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, but this is life and death. I'm going to knock on his door. He told me he got to the door of the rabbi. And just as he got to the door of the rabbi, he remembered that moment in the park, right? How many years ago? 30 years ago. He remembered that moment in the park. The true story is incredible. And he said, wait a minute. I thought I was going to die then. I was a kid, but I thought I was going to die. He said, you know something? I'm telling myself I wanted to do tshuva. No, he said, well, tshuva, but if I wanted the tshuva, so let me do tshuva now, right? And I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to knock on his door. I'm not going to wake him up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to walk this out. And if I collapse, they'll pick me up, right? They'll be over the streets, and they'll. But I'm not going to drink, and I'm not going to knock on his door. And he managed to get home, and it loosened a bit, but not much. And he fell off to sleep. In the morning, he woke up, and the whole phenomenon was gone. He had. And then he realized what had happened. He realized what happened was that he bought the wife a tzongkal, this pill, to help her fast. But what this pill does is it generates what a woman needs, enables a woman to lactate, right? And there is a phenomenon on a very micro level of men who also lactate, not a lot. So whatever it did in a woman, it did on a very minor degree in him. And he lactated, and it came out of his mouth. It entered into his saliva. And that saliva solidified. And he understood what had happened. And he said to me the following, he said, Shai, he said, I had said I wanted to do tshuva. I didn't know what it meant. It meant. And Hashem put this idea in my head to buy these pills. I never bought these pills before for my wife, not even for myself. He put this idea in my head. He understood that I was serious, and he wanted to show me what tshuva really was. And I want to tell you, Shaya, I'm a different person now. I no longer think back about this moment in the park when I drank my... that water in Yom Kippur, I know I have done complete tshuva. That is the story of this young man who did tshuva, which leads us now to our focus on tshuva in what we're working on, which leads us to this phenomenon of rejoining the circle. Now, so what does rejoining the circle mean? Rejoining the circle means that each of us has an neshama within ourselves, but we are estranged from it because of what has happened, what has occurred over weeks, months, years, decades, where we behaved in ways that we never really wanted. We just fell in and couldn't get out. And the neshama always lives in us. It never leaves us. It always has a vision of Olam Haba, a vision of eternity, a vision of purity and kedusha. In each of us, no one is without neshama. We say in the morning, I've told many times, "Haneshama shenasata be tahora hi." It's pure. We say, "Mordei nifnecha melacha b'kayam shekasata be neshmasi." You can recognize neshama, right? It's there, it's part, it's an integral part of who we are as Jews. Hashem puts this guiding light in us of a neshama. And it's always there, it's always shining brightly. We can't always see it. My friend Paul Pesach, who was unable to learn with his uncle because he did it as an act of kindness, and his uncle opened up his mind and his heart to Torah, at that moment, his neshama revealed to him, right, what life is about. Olam Haba, right? So this was the neshama. Now, rejoining the circle means a way of doing tshuva. Now, how do we do tshuva? Do we hit ourselves on chet? Thank you, Hashem. I'm gonna be good. I'm gonna be a good boy from now on. I'm going to behave, right? No. Rejoining the circle means that every act we do that we have done in our lives, there is a permanent memory in our DNA, in our memory bank, in our cells, in our mind, in our hearts, of every aspect of what we have done. There's not a single act that we have ever done that we have forgotten. We just don't think about it. And so Rejoining the circle means undertaking, or creating a certain experience around as many of these acts that we can remember that we want to undo, that we want to say, Hashem, if I was there, if I can go back to that spot now, right, to that place now, where my friend, somebody told me, he said, I feel so terrible, he said, it was Tisha B'Av, and we were in a bungalow colony, right, and there were a couple of hillbillies that lived across the street from the bungalow colony, and they were Jewish, but they really didn't know anything. And they invited us in on Tisha B'Av night. And Tisha B'Av night, you go to shul, you say a little bit of kinnis, and you hear echo, and then you have nothing to do, right? He said, they invited us into the house, and they showed us, this was a long time ago, so it was on a projector, a porn movie. He said, Hashem, I watched a porn movie on Tisha B'Av, right? How could I live with myself? So for this guy, I think if I remember his name correctly, his name is Eddie. I think is what he called himself. He said, this guy, Eddie, he said, if only I can go back and undo that experience. That's not me. I was a stupid kid, I was a guy who liked to play baseball. I went to a bungalow colony and a couple of hillbillies across the street, Jewish, but didn't know anything. And they were good, they were out having a good time. They didn't know what Tisha B'Av, they invited us in. I wasn't going to eat. If you're going to eat something, I went to Tisha B'Av. But I could watch a porn movie. Wow. Because I never would have done that. And for Eddie, it was teaching him, rejoin the circle, was going to back. In the same way, going back and not drinking at night. For Eddie, it was going back and saying to these guys, thank you, Benath, thank you. But how do you say thank you, Benath? They're not here anymore. This was 25 years ago. Who knows where they are now? Doesn't make a difference. But in Eddie's mind, they're still there. And in Eddie's heart and neshama, they're still there. So rejoining the circle. So the concept is like this. If we're looking to close that firewall, and we really want to close that firewall, because we know we don't need any of it. The most powerful thing we can do is to relive moments and do tshuva. Because that gives us what we call siyata d'shmaya. That gives us that divine assistance to say, hey, I'm gonna help you. I know you're struggling. I know you're limited. And I'm going to give you what you need to pull yourself out of this forever. And tshuva becomes the most important dimension, the most important element, dynamic of siyata d'shmaya. Right? So we're gonna do a meditation on rejoining the circle, and which I think you'll find incredibly powerful. When I first discovered it, I was kind of overwhelmed with it myself. So what we're going to be doing is like this. To prepare for the experience, I would like you to select, and you can, in your mind, you can write them down, the names of two or three really quality people that you admire, that you look up to, in terms of their spirituality, in terms of their dignity, their morals, right? I would like you to think of two or three people. Paul would certainly choose his uncle, right? Or his rabbi, right? Or someone else would choose Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, even if you don't know him. But people that you may have known, or people that you never knew, and it's not important. But as long as you know the name, what they stand for, or if you remember the face, remember the person, personality. So put down the names of two or three people that you remember, so that either you remember vividly or that you have thought about, you've heard about. Okay? Now, I would like you to remember two or three things that you have done in throughout the years, not more than two or three, that you really feel, I really shouldn't have gone there, I really shouldn't have done that. I know one guy recently told me that he got angry at his wife and he jumped into the car and he went to see one of his old girlfriends, right? And he almost blew his marriage, right? I really shouldn't have gone into the car. I really shouldn't have gone there. Right? He was able to stop himself at the last minute, but had he not, boy, there was no way he could have hit it. Because, you know, people with social media, everything goes around and everything comes back. Right? So let's write two or three events that you engaged in. Remember them or think about them that you really would like to undo, right? Tshuva. So that's where we're starting. We're starting with two preparatory activities. One is to remember the names of people that you knew or didn't know, that you admire for their morality, for their dignity, for their ruchnius. And the other is two or three acts that you have engaged in that you really, now that you're older, and you say, man, it was stupid. Why did I do that? Right? So I shouldn't have gone there. I shouldn't have spoken to that person. It was this, right? I shouldn't. It was, you know, it was Tisha B'Av night. What am I? Why am I jumping into this guy's house, these hillbillies' house, and watching a video, right? Okay, so that's how we're preparing. Now with that, we're going to do a rejoining the circle meditation. So for this meditation, I would ask you, very simply, to close your eyes, and you can hear this meditation in the future when you're walking or when you're sitting in a lounge chair or lying in bed or wherever you may be, even in the office. And this is the rejoining the circle meditation. You'll see the power and beauty of this meditation and why it evokes. We call this heavenly assistance, Siyata Deshmaya, that enables you to reach heights that you've never reached before. So welcome to the rejoining the circle meditation, where you will discover that you can return to crucial moments in your life, where you can relive and recreate reality. This is life's most precious truth, that at every moment in our lives, Hashem is enabling us to relive our past in a caring, loving, and constructive manner. You can listen to this meditation while sitting or lying in a private or quiet place, or while you're walking in a quiet area, and you will not be distracted. So here we go. Begin your walk or your imagined walk by looking straight ahead and imagining you are walking on a serene, tree-lined country road, surrounded by lush green mountains. Dusk is setting in and the sun is gently disappearing behind the peaceful mountains. In front of you, you see a wondrous light. You see a glowing pillar of light emerging from the heavens. And as you get closer, you can see that this pillar of light is composed of countless minute, luminous, living beings. Each of these living beings is alive with a gentle, glowing fire from within. Each being is dancing with joy and bursting with an illuminating energy of life. You realize that you are privileged to observe a joyous and loving light that can only emanate directly from Hashem. This pillar of the living light is Hashem's gift of love. It is the source of your own life every moment. It's always there, even though we may never see it. It's as if Hashem's secret presence from behind the curtain of life is being revealed to you at this very moment. And as you approach this pillar of light, it is slowly approaching you. You are now face to face. Breathe in deeply and welcome these luminous, loving beings into your nostrils. And as they gently flow into your lungs and heart and caress every cell of your body, permit the illuminating light to fill your mind and travel down your neck, branching off to your arms, down to your fingers, down to your chest, to your stomach, your thighs, your knees, your ankles, your toes. Your entire being is filled with this warm illumination of Hashem's gift of love. Experience every cell of your being alive with Hashem's breath of love from your head to your fingertips to your toes. Now imagine walking in a lush green meadow. You can smell the heavenly aromas from the flowers and the blossoms. You can feel the warmth of the summer sun above you. The trees, you can see the trees gently swaying in the summer breeze. You see a stream of gently flowing crystal waters. And next to the stream is a large tree with full overhanging branches covered with magically colored blossoms. And you sit under the tree and feel the cooling breeze in the shade and hear the flow of the waters. You feel a calmness come over your body and mind. You realize that you are in Hashem's loving hands. Inside you are quiet and peaceful. Look up into the sky and say, Hashem, I am calmed by the beauty of life all around me and within me. I am calmed by your love that flows through me with every breath I take. My body, my being, is calmed. Hashem, I always want to be aware of your gift of love so I can be continuously grateful to you for all your wonderful gifts of life. Whether I am, whether in sunlight or in darkness, your love for me never ceases. And as you sit under the tree, you are aware of Hashem's breath of love, of the neshama that he has placed within you, and the eternal crown you are creating in your life. You are aware of the Tzelem Elokim, that you were created in the image of God and your own inner beauty. You are aware of the Olam Haba that awaits you. All of these are part of your consciousness and awareness of life. You are also aware of how the eyes have misled you and entrapped you throughout your life. But you are feeling safe in Hashem's loving embrace, protected from them. In front of you, as the sun is setting, you can see an image taking place. Right? You can see yourself about to engage in something that you realize you never should have done. Perhaps it was seeing somebody going someplace, doing something. Imagine yourself about to commit this act. And as you are about to commit it, you realize, I don't want to be here. I want to be someplace else. I want to be doing something else. Think of one of the individuals that you have remembered before, someone that you know, someone that you don't know. It doesn't make a difference because it's all you and your desire and your deep, deep conviction to make life different, to do tshuva. And say, you, please, sir, whether you're Rav Moshe or you're my grandfather, you're my uncle, whoever you are, please help me. Please come and rescue me from what I'm about to do because I don't have the ability to do it myself. I need you to help me at this moment, to take me out of this, to transport me to a different place in my mind and heart, because I realize that it's a lie, that it's false, that it's destructive, that it never gave me ever for a second what I thought it would. Only horrible feelings within myself. And as you are saying this, you imagine yourself pulling away from that which has already been done, as if it never happened. You are now in the arms, in the protection of this individual. You say, thank you very much. I have no words to express my love and gratitude for you for helping me. You have undone an event. And even if the event had occurred on a physical level, you have undone it in your mind, in your heart. Because that's what you desire, to undo it. You never would have wanted to do it had you had the chance, had you had the choice, the bechira, as they say. And as you are sitting under the tree, having undergone this moment of tshuva, this magnificent moment of undoing an event, you realize that something has changed within you. And as the sun is setting, you can see a fire in the distance, and the flames are lighting up the night. Around the fire, there are individuals dancing, a dance of great joy and inspiration. Their faces are illuminated by the flame inside. Their souls are on fire. They're so close to Hashem. They are close to Olam Haba. They are close to eternity. And now you have a deep yearning inside to join them, to dance in the circle. And as you begin walking towards the fire and get closer, you can see there are many faces you recognize and admire dancing around the circle. Faces of greatness from this generation, from past generations. Faces of names people who never knew and never will know, but you can see for their faces, by their faces, how great they are. You approach and the circle opens up to greet you. And you are brought into the circle, you are welcomed into the circle. And you say to yourself, thank you, Hashem. This is where I belong. You are dancing with great joy, united with these beautiful neshamas. You are now becoming your true self once again. It never left you, but you didn't know how to reach it. You feel inspired by the fire at the center. Then you realize that the center of the fire is Hashem himself. And the light is illuminating his love for you. The fire is a sign from the heavens that brings joy and love with every step you take. Every musical note enables you to feel a sense of life, great fulfillment and happiness within yourself and everyone in the circle. I want to live this way forever, you tell yourself. I never want to leave this, not in this world and not in the world to come. And as you dance around the circle, you can say, Hashem, thank you for inviting me back into your circle. I have done tshuva, and you have invited me back. Only you know that I have never wanted to leave. I have always desired to be close to you and all these neshamas. I have been able to reclaim a part of myself, and I am rejoining the circle. And there are so many times I realize that I can rejoin the circle. All I need to do is close my eyes, place myself under the tree, look at an event that I want to undo, ask someone to help me who I trust, change what has happened into something that never happened, because I changed my mind, because I grew, because I did tshuva. And now you can open your eyes, having experienced rejoining the circle. So that is the rejoining the circle experience. I hope you found it valuable. It's helped you. The way to use this, by the way, in life is that there are countless things that we have done in this area and other areas that we want to say, I really didn't mean to. I didn't really mean to eat that trafe, that pork chop, right? I didn't. You know, I want to tell you a personal story. When I was a kid, I was in the hospital. I was very sick. I was in the hospital up in the Hudson. And I didn't, you know, there was nobody around. And no one, my mother couldn't travel. And it was 3 hours away, 4 hours, quite an incredible way to get up there. But couldn't. And there was no one Jewish there. And I was a young kid. And I, you know, they serve pork and beans, right? for one Jewish person, you know, and they didn't do it anyway. So I was wondering whether we're going to, if I take out the pork, right? So I'm not going to go into what I did and didn't do. That's a whole other story. But each of us has our moments in life that we want to undo. And whether you're davening or whether you're taking a walk, right? Or you're just thinking things through, go through a rejoining the circle. Undo it. Undo it with somebody's help. Say, thank you, please help me. And then you can undo the event. It's an incredible experience. And then from there you rejoin the circle. Hashem is waiting for you. So this is the program that I wanted to share with you tonight. I hope that you have found it helpful and that my voice has not gotten in the way too much. And we can certainly open it up for anything anybody wants to ask me or tell me. We have a couple of minutes. Please do so if you wish, or we will end the session for tonight. Yep. Okay. So I don't hear anything, or Bechor, you have anything to say, or questions, or if not, then we will wish you all a very good night, and have a wonderful week. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Hello, hello.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
Shalom, shalom.
Good for you. Okay, good.
Yes. Okay, so Rabbi Asher, I'm running to the bar mitzvah. I was really supposed to be there at 7:30.
Oh, okay. Very good. So we'll talk.
Yeah, we'll talk.
How much of it did you catch? Wait a second. Why do we miss one?
يا ساتر يا ساتر يا الله يا الله ترى شاركهم قدوم دم سرنا سعفو شروجي تهوه أخوه.